Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
You are now going to be a target, a scalp for other teams to beat. You're the team on top of the league. But it seems like your players are dealing with it well. They've relaxed body language. They're smiling even before the game today.
Yes, but I want this. We don't have a pressure. Our pressure is to do our best match after match. That's our goal. Now arrived the very big rock against us, because arrived Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool, City, Manchester City, and then is it good to see how we react?
Yes, Leicester City are your Premier League leaders. Unbelievable. Gary Neville gets a draw in his debut with Valencia, and Bayern Munich lose. European Football Weekly starts right now.
I'll wait till the beat go in.
Vardy to his right hand side here. Here is Vardy. Unselfishly to Mahrez, it's the hat-trick, Leicester proving what a team they are. Vardy chasing the record, does not go for goal himself, but he sets up a hat-trick for Riyad Mahrez, who has now scored 11 goals this season.
Oh yeah, baby, everything is coming up, foxes. Sounds weird.
I know, eh?
Yeah.
There's going to be a Mahrez and Vardy end at the King Power Stadium. Is that too much? Is that too much?
It's too wordy.
How do you expect anything less? When one doesn't score a hat trick, the other one scores a hat trick.
They are the Premier League's best duo right now. That is for certain. I'm Dan Riccio. He is Thomas Michalakos. You know the show. It is European Football Weekly. Hashtag EFW590 is where you can follow us on the Twitterverse, and we implore you to do so.
So,
we're going to talk to James Sharp in just a second, and we're going to talk a lot about Leicester City.
Do you think these Leicester beat reporters are getting requests for interviews constantly now?
Well, they never certainly expected to be Premier League leaders. What is it, 15 games in now, 14 games in? It's madness right now. And as we mentioned, Riyad Mahrez scoring the hat-trick, Jamie Vardy getting an assist on the third goal instead of going for goal himself. So his streak of scoring in consecutive games ends at 11, 3-0 over Swansea. I don't even know what to say anymore. So let's get right to James Sharp. Before we just word ourselves into nonsensical superlatives of the Leicester City Foxes. So, joining us now is James Sharp. At the Sharp End is where you can follow him on Twitter. He writes for the Leicester Mercury, and he's joining us now. So, James, I imagine at the start of the season, you did not expect to be covering the Premier League leaders almost midway through.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, it's not just you guys that are watching on thinking, how the heck is this happening? We're doing it here. Like, every time I write that Leicester top of the Premier League, I'm thinking, how on earth is this happening? Last season they were there languishing at the bottom for so long, and now, well, they could be bottom of the table last Christmas and then top of it at this Christmas. It's just crazy.
Are we seeing the frequency level increase with Italian flags popping up around Leicester City?
Yeah, I guess so. It's crazy. And speaking of Italian things, Ranieri has come in and he's done such a good job. I mean, the foundations of that team were there under Nigel Pearson, the former manager. But Ranieri's kind of come in and he's not really changed that much. He's just seen what there was good, and they were at the end of last season they were brilliant. He's just looked and seen that there is a good side there, and he's just tweaked little bits and bobs here, and now they're just kind of reaping the rewards of just brilliant football.
James Sharp joining us here on European Football Weekly. So, James, I kind of want to touch on that a little bit further, because Nigel Pearson, I don't know, were you one of the ones that he called an ostrich last year? I hope not.
No, it wasn't me, although I was sat behind the ostrich.
Oh, you did sit behind.
I was there. I mean, I thought for a second, I thought it might be, maybe it wasn't. It was the guy in front of me, but that was really strange.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite moments from the league last year. Although a lot of them came from Nigel Pearson, he was quite the character to follow along with in the league last year. But now, you know, he had that hard nose type of feel to him, and in comes Claudio Ranieri, who's kind of like this cuddly old grandpa that's just, you know, kind of wishing everybody well, encouraging them softly. He's just totally two different complete mindsets as managers.
You won't see Ranieri tussling with someone on the sidelines like Pearson.
No, you won't. But interestingly, Pearson was always very, like you say, was always a bit confrontational with the media and then also kind of with the fans as well. So in front of the media, he was always kind of this brash person who was difficult to kind of get inside the barrier that he put up, and he would always be a bit, like I said, picking fights here and there and everywhere. Whereas Ranieri is the opposite of that. Like, he'll shake every journalist's hand before a press conference. But interestingly, behind the scenes, it's almost like they flip round. So Pearson was always quite confrontational in front of the media, but with his players, he was very kind of arm around the shoulder. He'd be very kind of father-like with the players. Whereas Ranieri, from speaking to a couple of the players, Ranieri he's not scared of shouting at the players behind the scenes. So while he might be a gentleman to us all in the media and quite charming, he's not scared to kind of give the players a bit of kind of shouting if it's needed.
What made Leicester want to make the move at manager? Because it was pretty late in the off season that they decided to make the change.
First of all, it wasn't for any footballing reasons, really. I mean,
right,
he did brilliantly to get them to safety from when they were bottom, but then the sex tape scandal in Thailand, and his obviously
right.
Pearson's son was involved there. And so the kind of relationships between the manager and the owner around that made them decide that they kind of should go different ways. So unfortunately for Pearson, it came at a time when he'd done really well with Leicester. But so sadly, it was for non-footballing reasons. But like I say, under Ranieri, things have kind of gone from strength to strength now.
Listening to Ranieri speak during his post-match conference, everyone's always asking him, what's the objective, what's this? And he's always saying 40 points.
You can't
points.
Really understand him in his broken English
no,
either.
No,
all that much.
But, you know, 40 points. He keeps drilling that. But, you know, week after week, they keep winning. They keep getting those points. So now, are Leicester fans have their feet firmly on the ground, or are the expectations getting to them? Or are they just happy to be there?
Well, I'll start with Ranieri, and I spoke to him after the game on Saturday, and I said again, I was like, is your target still 40 points? Because you're 2 points straight at the top of the Premier League now. And he said, no, we're still looking at 40 points, which is ridiculous. And he said before that the fans can dream as much as they like, whereas the players have to keep themselves firmly on the ground, which they're good at doing, to be fair. But fans-wise, and kind of from my point of view, we keep saying, we keep looking at it and thinking, this is crazy. It must stop sometimes. But like now, this week at work, we're doing stories on about how Leicester are they genuine title contenders now, and what is the actual expectation? And the expectation now, it can't be just avoiding relegation. And kind of with that in mind, what do you do in January now? Do you look to bring in players that could try and keep you in the top four and actually look to push on to the title? Because at the minute, that kind of should be the target, because they look the best and most consistent side in the Premier League.
Now here's the thing. I know it's the season, and I'm going to play Scrooge. Okay, we see small teams, all right, who turn to big. They go from small to big too fast, and we all know it's a financial thing nowadays, and you spoke on it. Will they go for players to help them push for the top four? I think they'd be foolish if someone came in with a 30-40 million pound offer for Jamie Vardy not to take it, given the stature of the club. Can we see any of these players moving for substantial sums?
I don't think Leicester don't need to sell because the Leicester's owners are billionaires from Thailand. They are like one of the richest families in Thailand. So Leicester don't need the money for a start. whether they got a bid of 30, 40 million for Jamie Vardy, who's turning 29 next year, you don't know if they'd look at it and think that's probably more than he's worth, or whether they think that is what he is worth. So I don't think that they have no intention to sell Ranieri, and the club do not have no intention of selling Jamie Vardy or Riyad Mahrez, kind of no matter what. I say no matter what the price, but they aren't looking to sell. But they have the money there. They have the money if they want to bid and push for kind of higher, more elite players. The money is there. But Ranieri has said that he doesn't want to spend in January. He's happy with his squad as it is. But like I said before, now it comes to the time of, should he gamble? Like, Leicester have never had a better chance to get into Europe. And by Europe, I don't just mean like the Europa League, like top four Champions League places. They've never had a better chance to do this. So the money is there. The owners have got the money. They've got the ambition. They've said before that they want Leicester to be playing European football in the next few years. So why not look at more elite players that could get you in the Champions League?
Well, regardless of the money, I know the owners have the vault full of cash, right? But like you said, Jamie Vardy's 29 years old. His selling value will never be as high as it is as going into January. So I would think that it's smart business to make that sell, and then it's on.
But you could also make history, like for a club that's never been in this position before.
True. But this is what will show what the club is about. If they're scouts, if they're people outside of the, you know, looking at players, to sell Jamie Vardy for 40 million and then take that money and put it on other players, fine. But don't you think it'd be foolish for them not to sell Jamie Vardy if a club is foolish enough to spend 40 million on half a season?
I think that's so very kind of business like, and I'd love to think that the kind of the romance of football is still strong enough there not to think, right, this is kind of like buy, like just trading and buying and selling players. I'd love to kind of hold on to that kind of romantic image of, like you say, Leicester, a small club in comparison to the big title giants, creating a team where they can push and try and win the league, and what an incredible story that would be. I think the club would go along with that and not kind of think, hang on, we're never going to get more money than this for Jamie Vardy, so let's sell now. I think their desire for where the club and what the club can achieve this season, I would hope, and I think that it is more kind of grounded in what Leicester could do with Jamie Vardy as opposed to without him and 40 million.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at the whole idea, like where the Premier League is at right now, and Manchester City has their problems. Manchester United can't seem to score a goal if their life depended on it. Chelsea, certainly, they've got plenty of issues this year. I mean, you may never have another Premier League season that is just so wide open, and I think that has to factor into it as well, right?
Yeah, exactly, and that's the thing, because people have been kind of writing Leicester off as title contenders, but... And what will kind of judge them is before the Man United game 2 games ago, Leicester fans looked at the next set of fixtures and thought, right, well, this is where we play against the big boys. So Manchester United, Swansea away, Chelsea at home, Everton and Liverpool away, and Man City at home. Like, they are the elite of the division. But like you say, you look at Chelsea and how poor they are and how kind of cumbersome their defence is. I'd fancy Vardy and Mahrez against that defence, against a side like Chelsea. The same against Man City. When Kompany is not in that side, they are poor defensively. And as a Leicester fan, I'd love to see Vardy and Mahrez exploiting players like Di Michaelis and Mangala. And so they're really nothing to fear. Look at Liverpool, and they're in transition under Klopp and looking really good, but then they go and lose at Newcastle. So there's, like you said, the Premier League has never been so wide open. And what Leicester are doing now, which is what the other so-called fancy title giants aren't doing, is Leicester haven't dropped points against teams that they shouldn't be dropping points against. Like Liverpool lost at Newcastle. Man City lost at Stoke, even though Stoke were really good. They drew with Aston Villa. They're dropping points against teams they shouldn't be. Leicester haven't done that yet. Leicester got a point at Stoke. Leicester beat Aston Villa. Leicester won at Norwich. Leicester aren't dropping points against teams that they shouldn't be doing. And that's why there's a sense now that Leicester really, they could do it this year. But I mean, it's unlikely, but
yeah,
like, it's just such a great challenge. I'm getting really excited now. You're making me dream about Europe.
Hopeless romantic.
James Sharp, our guest here on European Football Weekly, at The Sharp End is where you can follow him on Twitter. So you've clearly enjoyed following the Premier League leaders. What's it like following a rock star in Jamie Vardy, who setting the record? I mean, you've been following this guy. What's it been like? What are the fans thinking about this guy? Are they ready to erect a statue of him outside the King Power
easy
Stadium?
Easy now.
Yeah, and having like stands named after him and all that.
Right.
They love him. He's one of those players where, because of how he can be quite, he's quite abrasive and quite in your face. He's one of those players where if he plays for you, you absolutely love him and think he's brilliant. But if he plays against you, he's one of those players that you'd hate because he's quite, because he's in your face, he's confrontational. But the Leicester fans love him and they adore him and think he's brilliant. And because of the way that he will chase balls down and just harass defenders, and even in the 90th minute, he'll be chasing down lost causes. And for fans, that's the one thing you want to see from your players. And Leicester fans love him, and because he's come from, and even though he's come from non-league football, and now he's in kind of the Premier League, and he's the big time, he's the most lethal striker in the Premier League. He's not lost that sense of where he came from. It was the fact that he would work hard on the pitch and he would give everything when he was in non-league. That's what's got him to where he is now. And even though he's there now, he's not looking. There's like a long ball kickboard, and there's like a half a chance he'll get there. He's not looking at it and going, "Oh no, I can't wait to chase that ball down. Oh, I'll run after the next one." He's not lost that hunger and desire, and fans just love to see that from a top class striker. He's just, they love him.
And I can see why they certainly do love him, James. Before we let you go, I know Claudio Ranieri earlier this season said, or he challenged his players and said, "I'll buy you guys hot dogs if you get a clean sheet." Well, they've had a few of those now. Have the hot dogs come about? Did you get a part of the hot dogs or the pizza, whatever it was?
No, I didn't get a part of the pizza. But the amount of talk about pizzas, the pizza talk went on for so long. when they kept their first one, he took the players out to a local pizza restaurant in town, and they had a pizza-making workshop where, I mean, have a pizza, but they had to make their own. So what kind of pressure is that for keeping a clean sheet? They didn't even get bought them, they have to make them themselves.
Well, he's got to bring them to Italy, and then
treat them to some
real pizza, right? That would be the ultimate.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe once
we get in the Champions League.
Yeah. Once they win the Premier League, that'll be on the cards. He is James Sharp,
yeah, exactly.
At The Sharp End is where you can get him on Twitter to follow along with the Premier League leaders, the Leicester City Foxes, and he does write for the Leicester Mercury as well. Thanks so much for doing this, James. It's been fun.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, so there is James Sharp, and yes, he is living the life of a rock star right now, Thomas.
Yeah, but, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, the Jamie Vardy movie. You know, we laugh and everything. But
Zac Efron.
Yeah, but
I'm all on it. Zac Efron
now.
Yep.
That might work. That might work, because he's had a lot of bombs. But here's the thing. I like how just the media, everything, no one talks about his racial slurs.
Well, we kind of mentioned it last week.
We kind of mentioned it, and it just bothers me that every little article I read is about this guy. He's up
well, that's why I think it would make a great movie.
It would make a great movie.
Assuming they put that stuff
exactly,
in
exactly.
Not
exactly.
Like the Ronaldo propaganda movie. That
no.
Was like,
did you watch it eventually?
No, I did not watch it yet.
You have to
I so badly do not want to waste 2 hours of my life.
It's only an hour and a half,
just
I think.
Like a two-hour advertisement that Cristiano Ronaldo is the best player in the world.
But that's
I don't think he is. For me, it's still Lionel Messi. But
it is definitely Lionel Messi. But that's the thing with Vardy, is it just drives me nuts how no one talks about it. And it kind of got swept under the rug when it's real. It's a real thing that he said. And you know what? We've all been drunk. We've all been in situations. I have never in my drunken state said a racial slur.
No.
Of any sort.
No.
Because that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to believe that there's something deep rooted in someone to say something like that. And if it was the other word he did say, and we all know that word,
mm-hmm.
you think he would have got off this scot-free?
Probably not.
No. And that's the problem.
Leicester City's had enough scandals already in the last year.
I just had to get that off my chest.
I know. It's been a big problem for me as well. And like I said, if they do make a Jamie Vardy movie, which apparently somebody is actually looking into this.
Well, if it's a made-for-TV movie, you know this part won't be in it.
On the BBC?
Yeah.
Probably not. Let's get to some of the other games. And you know what? Let's actually head to Stamford Bridge. You remember when Stamford Bridge was a fortress? Nobody could ever beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. How about the Bournemouth Cherries?
Stanislas with the delivery. Awkward for Courtois. It's Cook! Into the frame, Murray with a header. What a goal, what a story. Glenn Murray off the bench and scores for Bournemouth with just about his first touch of the game.
Sorry, Jose Mourinho. I mean, maybe you thought things were turning around slightly, but didn't turn out that way.
Well, and for Glenn Murray, the veteran.
Yep.
You know, Crystal Palace, they let him go. You know, he brought them up and he found his way on to Bournemouth, and fantastic for him. I mean, great goal, great game for Bournemouth. They did their job that they needed to be. They had to basically bore Chelsea to
the
ground.
They had their chances, though, on the counterattack. They played some decent football.
They did, but it was Chelsea who had majority of possession, as you would expect.
Well, yeah, possession, but, you know, Chelsea's also a team that can't seem to score an open play these days. Their leading scorer is Willian with 6 goals. And
he's the star of the season.
All of his goals have come on set pieces, every single one of those 6.
And brought in points.
Exactly. And you look at Chelsea, they had 44 crosses in this game. And if you really watch the tape, too often, Diego Costa, who is supposed to be the number 9 for this Chelsea team, was not in the right areas to score. He was not in and around the 6-yard box. He kept just drifting off into nowhere land.
The love affair, how has it ended so fast?
Even the big chance that Matic had, it's like, where's Diego Costa? He's somewhere at the edge of the box, like totally away from the play, and I just can't understand it. I don't know what's going on.
You know what it looks like to me? It looks like he doesn't want to play for his manager.
Maybe.
You cannot say that their rift or their, you know, we see it, the bib throwing, the fighting that was reported in the locker room and everything. There has to be something there. You will not push for a man that you don't respect. And it's starting to seem that Costa does not respect Mourinho.
Maybe this is a sign of that sort of thing happening with Chelsea right now. I don't know. Chelsea has just 1 goal in their last 4. That's not the stat I'm looking at. Bournemouth ran more than 10 kilometers more.
Boom. Right there.
Than Chelsea
in this
game.
And why is that, do you think?
Because they were chasing the ball the whole time?
Yes. A little bit. Good. You drew me into that one. That was good.
Woo-hoo!
One for Riccio on that one. Yes, they were chasing the ball, but also they're pulling and they're pushing for their manager. You have to have belief in your manager, and they do. And it's sorry to say, Sir Alex Ferguson said it, it came out today, I saw, that he said that Chelsea would be foolish to get rid of Jose Mourinho, and I still believe they would be foolish to get rid of
Mourinho. There's no other option, at least at this point in time.
You don't get rid of a manager like that unless he wants to leave.
Yeah, and if you can get, like, Carletto, maybe, or, you know, you have to have somebody of that stature coming in. Like, you're not...
And getting rid of the dead wood.
You're not replacing Roberto Di Matteo here, like... This is Jose Mourinho.
Or Rafa Benitez.
Yeah, thank you very much. All right, let's head over to the Britannia Stadium because Stoke were playing Manchester City pretty elementary this one. You think Manchester City, top of the league, right alongside Leicester, would easily possibly get 3 points against a struggling Stoke side, right?
Shaqiri. The return from Johnson and then tries to take the long way around Fernando. Around he goes. And pass collar off. A good ball in and it's finished. Arnautovic in to put Stoke in front. Superbly anticipated that by the big Austrian. But how well made was it by the little Swiss?
How well, like that Swiss-Austrian combination, the best in Premier League history or what? I don't know how many else there have been.
True, so maybe that statement is factual. But here's the thing. It's not the cold night in Stoke anymore that ongoing joke about playing. They play like a European side. You look at Shaqiri, you look at Akurkic, you look at Arnautovic.
they look formidable. They look like a force, like a trident, a real one, not something that's just, you know, it's coming together right now and it's going to go away. They're really connecting, and Mark Hughes has really put a stamp on this club.
Yeah.
They're completely different than one before he came in the way they move, the way they play.
And he was awful at Manchester City. There's no question about that, but he has a better track record
and
with
a QPR.
Mid to lower he was better with mid to lower tiered teams, certainly in the Premier League outside of his stint with QPR.
Yeah, let's forget about
let's forget about that. So 2-0 for Stoke City already. They are not the same team they were a couple of years ago. More jump at attack. That's from Carl Santos on Twitter. Hashtag EFW590 at DanRicho590 at UnfitRef. Let me throw out a stat for you, as this maybe was Shaqiri's coming out party, and it was a great game by Stoke. But City with company in the lineup, 8 games played, 6 wins, 2 draws, 1 goal allowed. Without company in the lineup, 7 games played, 3 wins, 4 losses, 15 goals conceded.
What does that tell you right there?
Unbelievable. And we know
that's a general. No one's listening if company's not on the back line. No one's listening. Everyone's running like chickens with their heads cut off.
And you look at both goals. Arnautovic gets on the inside of Bakary Sagna.
Yep.
Both times. Never mind Di Michaelis, never mind Otamendi. They weren't really the ones at fault for these goals, because Arnautovic is coming in off the left wing, and Sanya's got to follow his run. Both times, he allowed Arnautovic to get on the inside, and there's your 2 goals. Albeit, Shaqiri had to play 2 pretty incredible balls to get it to him.
They were beautiful balls.
But still, it certainly didn't look like that was going to happen. Arsenal get a 3-1 win over Sunderland. Great. Awesome. Lovely. They should beat them every day of the week.
And there's nothing else to be said right there. Other than an Olivier Giroud own goal, like, really, there's nothing else.
And it was like a typical Olivier Giroud goal, though. Yeah. Like, cross comes in from the wing. He gets it on his left foot, short post, right?
Yeah.
It was pretty Olivier Giroud-like, and that's kind of what I loved about that own goal. Otherwise, I'm Dan Riccio. He is Thomas Michalakos. Couple more games, rapid fire here. First, let's head to London and to Upton Park, and let's check in on what happened with Manchester United and West Ham. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Nothing.
That's all I know about the game.
Yeah.
All you need to know about the game, too.
That's really all you need to know about the game. And this is
how
becoming
boring.
A big, big problem with Louis van Gaal and Manchester United. 4th scoreless draw of the year. They've been shut out a whole bunch of times this year. They don't score a lot of goals, and they certainly had their chances in the second half. Couldn't find the back of the net. Maybe it's just a lack of whatever quality in the final third. But for the most part, they wait 75 minutes to kind of open things up and really go for goal.
Yeah,
you can't keep doing that every week.
And that's why they have 20 goals on the year.
And here is an angry United fan on BBC Radio.
I'm watching at Old Trafford. I'm watching this turgid, dull fare that he is doling out. We all knew what we were going to get today. I'm watching at Old Trafford. I'm watching this turgid, dull fare that he is doling out. We all knew what we were going to get today. As soon as we saw Fellaini on the team sheet, because he's been given, and Rooney's been given a load of stick because of Rooney's performances, and he's not playing well, he's not creating anything, he's not moving. So what do we do? He comes out of the squad and we put somebody in who's less mobile and does even less on the ball and creates even less. I was checking text messages from the wife and looking at work emails. I mean, what is that about?
You have to love the Brits when they get mad at it.
If you're checking, if you're checking in on the wife and checking emails while your team is playing, while you're at the game, you know it's pretty dreadful.
Yeah, and the Louis van Gaal army chant, there's going to be a mutiny for sure. Yeah. Because the natives are getting restless.
And he was on BBC Radio as well this week or after the game and said something about, well, if we had Luis Suarez or Sergio Aguero, yeah, I'm sure we'd score.
Yeah, if I had...
But the crazy soccer media made a lot more of that than they should have, at least in my humble opinion.
0-0, though, again, with that kind of... They have quality. They're not West Brom.
No, they're definitely not West Brom.
So they should be scoring.
They should be scoring. Martial continues to be the most dangerous person on the pitch for United. Memphis Depay continued not to start, but he did come in and create a couple of chances off the left wing. So there are some positives, but for the most part, again, they were just very drab. They don't create a whole lot, especially early on in games. Don't even bother watching the first half of United right now because it's awful. It's awful. It's just them holding the ball and not even going after goal. Like, that's all it is.
They're going to be making moves in January, that's for sure.
And it'll be interesting to see if there's any retroactive discipline handed out to Bastian Schweinsteiger, who gave a little bit of an elbow to Winston Reid, who was not very happy about it, and Marouane Fellaini as well, with a bit of a stomp on one of the West Ham players. So we'll see if there's any retroactive stuff on that. Quick note on Liverpool losing to Newcastle, like, of all teams.
I know, of all teams. I was looking at like, we can't beat Newcastle. We can't. Is this really
punching
happening?
Bags of, you know, Liverpool got them in a bad spot, you know, because they came off two absolute obliterations.
Yeah,
they
got
absolutely
Liverpool,
lambasted.
Yeah, but Liverpool just came off six goals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's momentum there.
It was perfect storm.
Exactly. And the thing that I hate to see on Twitter and hear in the news and everything is Liverpool fans complaining about the Alberto Moreno goal that was disallowed. Now, mind you, he wasn't offside and it was a bad mistake, but it was a mistake by the linesman. But how many times has that happened to Liverpool this season where they got the lucky bounce and they got the 3 points? So it's karma. It comes back. It comes back to everything evens out in the end.
It also figures that I tipped them to have a big week in my fantasy blog for sportsnet.ca.
So it's all your fault.
Yeah, it is all my fault. And there was also a great note that Fabrizio Colaccini came out. He wrote a letter or something to fans saying sorry for their play of late. I mean, I feel like that happens every single year at some point. Does it not?
They almost have to.
Given
the ticket prices and the fans being in the stands and watching garbage.
Yeah, it's painful. Painful to be a Newcastle fan. I'm Dan Riccio. He's Thomas Michalakos. When we come back, let's tour Europe. Gary Neville, his debut for Valencia as manager. And he gets a draw with Barcelona. Yes, that Barcelona. Unbelievable. We'll tell you about it next. This is European Football Weekly.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Yeah, we are back. This is European Football Weekly. I am Dan Riccio. He is Thomas Michalakos. And let's head over to Spain right now, Thomas, because one of the things we've been talking about on this show so often is just how great Barcelona looks right now.
And that's what everyone's talking about, Dan, all the headlines after they win, how great they are, how amazing they play, the trident, this and that.
They obliterated Roma. Like, it wasn't even a contest.
No, and 6-1. That's a top Italian side.
Except in the Champions League, where they get spanked at least once a year.
And they look like Chelsea.
Like they did against Bayern Munich last year. So they don't really pose much of a test against some of the top sides in Europe. And that's another story for another day. But going into this game, Barcelona going up against Valencia, obviously a big game at the Mestalla.
Huge game.
Made even more big when Nuno Espirito Santo.
Glad you said it and I didn't.
Do you know what Espirito Santo means?
No,
Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit resigned from his job with Valencia.
That went in one ear and out the other, but continue.
And replacing the Holy Spirit, Nuno Espirito Santo, was Gary Neville. Like the same Gary Neville that had an orgasm when Fernando Torres was scoring against Barcelona.
The exact opposite of a Holy Spirit.
I wish there was a mic on Gary Neville Saturday when Barcelona was leading Valencia 1-0, and in the final minutes, Valencia gets the equalizing goal on the counterattack.
Yeah, well in for Neville there, but I've said it to you, and I've said it to anyone who really is in my inner circle, that British managers
don't travel well.
Don't travel well because the game is different. It's not the same as what they were taught, and I really, and it has nothing to do with him being an ex-Manchester United captain, but yeah, I don't see it. I don't see that ending well.
You know what? I listened to Graham Hunter, and he has what he calls the big interview. It's a podcast. It's great. He interviews some of the biggest names around the world of football, and if you like listening to that type of stuff, get out there and at least listen to the one with Gary Neville, because I found it fascinating. And in that interview, Gary Neville didn't seem like the atypical English manager.
No.
He had a broader mind about things. He certainly loves the game of football and loves the way Barcelona play. And he talked about that openly and having that type of a game about them. Not necessarily what everybody thinks to be the English way of football.
Well, we're not saying the English style of football is still punted up the pitch and run for it, because you could see it in the Premier League. There's not that many English players playing in the first teams of all the teams.
There's not a lot of English managers.
Exactly. And there's not a lot of English managers. However, they're taught the game.
How many English managers are on the top teams in England?
None.
Yeah.
What am I thinking? None.
Claudio Ranieri is Leicester. They're the top team.
Yeah, and then we can keep going down the list. West Ham, Bilic.
Yeah.
Mark Hughes and Alan Pardew, probably.
Yeah.
I think they're right below Liverpool in eighth.
So there's no Brits managing.
And for good reason, Dan. That's what I'm going to say. And for good reason. The game, they're taught the game differently. I'm not saying that Brit managers can't learn and adapt. That's not what I'm saying. But when you're going into a different league where it's completely upside down from the way you were taught how to do things, there is a learning period. And it's the window of learning is not that big when we look at England, when we look at Italy and Spain. Those managers get sacked, lights out, very quickly.
My question, though, is why did they go for Gary Neville? Like,
wasn't to sell jerseys.
And how does Valencia go after Gary Neville before a Premier League club does? Or maybe we don't know. Maybe Premier League clubs have chased
and
Gary Neville
no.
And he just kept saying no.
Which is smart. He wanted to get away from the English, you know, the British media. However, they're going to follow him there.
I wonder
still.
If he thinks for his managerial career that going to another league in another country and starting there is probably better. Like, we know he's done like lower level positions with other teams, with England and
with England
wherever
and
else.
I think that was highly beneficial for him.
Yeah. And so now his first job as a real manager, or as the top guy, the top man, is as the manager of Valencia. It's not a small job either.
Like, no, this because is a, Valencia is a as they're not contenders, but they're a big team
that could still be into the last 16 of the Champions League, depending how things break out this week. So this is a big job, and I also wonder why they chose Gary Neville when Phil Neville was already a part of the coaching staff there.
The two brothers are together now.
Yeah, so but it's a very strange situation.
His road to this, he did it the right way. Because we all look at other managers. Biggest example I can give you as doing it the wrong way is Roy Keane.
Right.
And how he was just brought into Sunderland. He really had no coaching experience. And we all know how that ended up. And we haven't seen him near a club again.
Atletico Madrid get a 2-0 win this weekend as well. They are now just 2 points off the top, which Barcelona currently sits at. Real Madrid are 4 points back. I believe they had a 4-1 win over the weekend.
Atletico is just doing it silently under the radar. They're 2 points behind Barcelona.
Yeah.
Wow.
They have so many great young players. They are so well coached. And we've had David Cartlidge on the show many, many a time. And we have asked him, who do you think is the best manager in the world right now? Unabashedly, without hesitation, every single time you ask him, he'll say Diego Simeone.
And why not? This guy makes stars, Dan.
Yeah, he absolutely does.
Look at how many players move on, and then he just brings another collection in. They just fit into the system. It's my way or the highway. You do not want to cross Diego Simeone at all.
Not on the field or off it, that is for certain. In Germany, Borussia Mönchengladbach get a win over Bayern Munich. Yes, you heard that right. The same Borussia Mönchengladbach that started the year with five straight losses. They are now 8-2, wins and draws, eight wins, two draws since then. And 3-1, they beat Bayern Munich. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was great. And now they're only Bayern Munich's 5 points up on Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah,
who also won.
It's still too big a gap because they'll have to basically win out.
Well, Dortmund would have to beat Bayern and then hope they would lose. Yeah, we all. I'm not saying that Dortmund is going to win the title. Bayern Munich's going to win the title.
Bayern's got a lot of injury trouble right now.
True, but no one should be surprised. Every good team is going to lose eventually. It just the way they lost, no one saw that coming. 3-1, solid win.
Yeah, an absolutely great win for Borussia Mönchengladbach, so good on them. In Italy, for the first time in 18 games, Napoli lose away to which team, Thomas? Do you know?
Bologna.
Unbelievable. This is like
it was
such...
It was 3-0. Every time I was looking at the score, it was, by a blink of an eye, it was 3-0.
Yeah, and Gonzalo Higuain tried to salvage it late. But they ran out of time to get an equalizer.
The score says doesn't give the Bologna any justice because they played really solid and they're unfortunate to allow two goals. But Pepe Reina, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, he's
bad third goal.
My boy. He's my favorite goalkeeper.
Okay.
And I know he's older and I know he's been playing well, but what a bad goal that
was.
Oh,
so bad.
He faced up to it. He said it was a soft goal after and he said that basically, Napoli have to learn humility.
Yeah, a little bit. I would say so. Gonzalo Higuain, what a season he's having. And it's not a normal Gonzalo Higuain season. He's been consistent throughout. Maybe when push comes to shove, he will choke once again. But right now, he has been an absolute star for this Napoli team. He's got 14 goals on the season.
He's not going
so
anywhere.
Far. No, he's not. He's not, and Maurizio Sarri has this team playing very, very well. It's hard to keep up that level of compete over and over and over again. You're going to have a bad result here and there. This was Napoli's. Let's see if they can pick back up and get back onto a winning track. Because right now, I would say there's one team that is going to beat Juventus for the title in Italy, and Juventus is really, really starting to get hot right now. It's Napoli. I don't believe in Inter Milan. They don't have enough going forward for me if they get behind in games.
Roma, no. Fiorentina.
You know, like they showed a little bit against Napoli a couple of weeks ago. By the way, that Inter-Napoli game was maybe one of the best I've watched in Europe this year.
Oh, I never watched it. Yeah, was it nice?
Oh, it was unbelievable. And great, great drama to the end of that one. And that was a game where Pepe Reina saved the day for Napoli. Fiorentina looks good as well. Roma, they're stumbling badly. And if things don't go well against Bate midweek in Champions League, Rudy Garcia is gonzo.
I have to agree with you, too, with the Napoli claim. I don't see any other club, because you just watch Juventus just keep rising to the top. Slowly they're moving up there.
They destroyed Lazio this week.
Exactly. So you know they're going to get up there very soon, and I agree. Napoli are the only team that look like they can compete against them.
And I think, you know, with all the new players that came into Juventus, they needed a little bit of time to figure out their best 11. They've finally done that.
Weathered the storm,
and it's been perfect ever since.
No wonder,
really.
No wonder you've been smiling.
Paulo Dybala has been unbelievable. He's got a better minutes to goal ratio than Carlos Tevez did last year,
and he's the guy.
And he's only 21.
Fawn over all the time.
He's only 21. Next week on the show, we'll get to your 11 of the year because we were supposed to do that last week. We didn't do it, and we don't have time for it this week either.
It's not that important.
Do you have a creme de la creme? We don't have the song because our producer's not here today.
Jorginho Wijnaldum, however you pronounce that man's name, but he was on fire.
Yeah, and that assist he provided for the second Newcastle goal was unbelievable, and Newcastle get the 2-0 win over Liverpool, and I will agree with your assessment, Jorginho Wijnaldum, or let's go with Riyad Mahrez. Give him a shout-out for a hat-trick.
Well, he's going to get a statue soon.
Jerdan Shaqiri also had a big week. But that's it for us. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. This was another fantastic, orgasmic edition of the one, the only, European Football Weekly.